From GPB News, this is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. It's almost Valentine's Day. Do you feel the love?
What people call love is just a chemical reaction that compels animals to breed. It hits hard, Morty, then it slowly fades, leaving you stranded in a failing marriage.
The Break Room will discuss whether Valentine's Day lives up to the hype every year. That's later this hour. First, though, we talked yesterday about Georgia's effort to create a truck-only highway lane. Georgia ranks very high in trailer truck accidents, according to the American Transportation Research Institute. Natalie Dale with the Georgia Department of Transportation explains why.
When you look at states throughout our nation, Georgia has one of the highest numbers of truck populations. We have a lot of trucks coming through our state, so it's not very surprising that we would have that we would rank high here because we, as a state, have the majority of truck traffic.
Now an effort is underway to create a 40-mile highway from Macon to McDonough for trucks only. And here are your first thoughts.
Hello, my name is Beverly Gaines. The traffic in Atlanta and metropolitan Atlanta is totally horrific. And I think that that is a perfect way to lessen the traffic and to give people some air to breathe and to exhale. Yes, I am totally for it. Thank you.
John Huey in Athens sent us an email. He was a transportation reporter and says he doesn't believe GDOT is honestly invested in easing traffic. He says, quote, "It was politically easy to cancel the Northern Arc so Atlanta will have no second loop road. Now, I'm not a believer in paving your way out of every problem, but this was something that would help Atlanta's massive transportation issues. Ditto GDOT's disinterest in passenger trains. I'd love to see evidence-based, cost-benefit decisions on how our road and transit money is spent, not just leave it up to GDOT, because GDOT doesn't care." End quote. We always like to get your opinions, however strong they may be. So call us at 404-500-9457 like Beverly did. We're also on Twitter, and you can post to Facebook as well, and we might feature your comments on the show. Nearly four decades ago, the Atlanta child murders shook the city. Between the years 1979 and 1981, 28 people were killed following the same basic pattern. Most of them were children. The investigation into those murders eventually focused on one man, Wayne Williams. He was arrested, convicted, and sentenced to two life sentences. A new podcast, Atlanta Monster, revisits that case. The podcast launched last month, and it's co-produced by Atlanta-based production companies How Stuff Works and Tenderfoot TV. With me to talk about it is Payne Lindsay, the host of Atlanta Monster, and also Jason Hoke, executive producer for Atlanta Monster. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's start the morning by talking about murder. You know, Payne, there's been a lot, both fictional and non-fictional, on the Atlanta child murders. What was missing from the narrative of these events?
I think the missing part is closure. Every family member I've talked to, they feel like this thing is still wide open. They were presented, you know, convoluted information that doesn't make any sense. They feel like Wayne Williams, the person behind bars, some of them feel like he didn't do it. And I think a lot of that comes from not closing this out properly. It's been so much gray area in this case and so
partly
much confusion.
Because he was convicted for the murder of two adults. He wasn't convicted for the
murder
of any of
the children. That's a big part of it, yes. I mean, we're talking about the Atlanta child murders, but Wayne Williams was convicted of two adults. No one was convicted of killing the kids.
So, Jason, was the purpose of the podcast then to hear about the alternative theories? Was that sort of the motive behind making the new podcast, was to hear the ideas behind Wayne Williams not being the culprit?
No, I think it was telling the whole story. And I think what we've found is there's a lot that has not been covered, and a lot that, let's just say the people that knew the story growing up, they thought they knew the story, and they don't really know the story. And then there's a whole generation who didn't even know this big story about a serial killer in Atlanta, didn't even know it existed. And so we really wanted to expose all those voices in the show.
So let's hear a clip from the podcast. This is from the very first episode, which is called Boogeyman. Payne, you're introducing a guest named Kalinda, who describes what it felt like to be in Atlanta at the time.
I was a child in Atlanta during that time. I was a 9-year-old living in Atlanta in the Fourth Ward, which was one of the areas from which children were taken. And I remember as a child the whispers and chatter among children. If you can imagine, this real-life boogeyman is actually out there.
But one of the things your podcast points out is that there's a real difference in how aware people were of this based on their race. Is that fair?
I say race and now generation. I was born in 87. I had actually never heard of this story.
In Kennesaw.
In Kennesaw. So I'm from Georgia. I'm from, you know, in the metro Atlanta area. And I'd never heard of this story. And I think a lot of people from my generation have never heard of it. My dad went to Georgia Tech here, and he definitely remembers this. But I think what she's saying is that based on where you're from, you remember things differently. If you were part of the black community in Atlanta, and you were one of the victims, or if you were the target, then you remember this way differently than someone else who was in the suburbs and was white.
And there's also, Jason, a real difference in the attitude of the black community towards the police and authorities. And in some ways, some people were already like preconditioned to not trust the police story.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of parallels to present day, too. I mean, part of this is looking back 30, 40 years and seeing what times were like back then in terms of attitudes around race and class and community. And we also have to look at ourselves and say, how much of that has really changed over the years, many, many years later.
So let's hear another clip from the series. This is from the third episode, which is called Atlanta Monster Seized. And we hear the voice of the FBI agent, and he's talking about when they first approached Wayne Williams because they put a stakeout on a bridge.
I went up to him and identified myself as a special agent of the FBI, and I asked him immediately if he knew why he was being pulled over. And he said, yes, it's probably because about those kids that are missing, which kind of surprised me. That was an unusual answer, I thought. And the next words out of his mouth was, he says, you know, he said, Channel 5 is really covering this very well, but Channel 11, I don't think, covers it enough.
So since then, Payne, we do have evidence that Wayne Williams, there was a psychological profile that the FBI created at the time, and Wayne Williams turns out to fit it exactly. And we got DNA evidence also that excludes, I think, 98% of the population, but does not exclude Wayne Williams. How convinced were the law enforcement that they had gotten the right guy?
Oh, they were convinced. I mean, this is back when FBI profiling, this sort of criminal profile they make of someone, was just beginning. And they had very talented people, one of them being John Douglas. He made this very extensive, the best, right? He made this extensive profile, and they were all convinced that Wayne Williams fit it to a T. And
still,
if you look
convinced,
at it, still convinced. Yes, they definitely have zero doubt in their minds. When I've talked to them, they believe Wayne Williams is the guy.
So, Jason, what keeps the doubt alive, do you think? As you've gone and talked to more of these people, and I gotta say, I'm a little skeptical of many of these conspiracy theories, because the one thing we keep hearing over and over is, oh, no, it couldn't have been Wayne. I would have never imagined him killing kids. But what person is going to say, you know, as soon as I met him, I knew that guy was a child murderer, right? Nobody ever says that about someone they know, right? So what did you hear from some of these people who are doubtful?
I mean, I think we heard everything. And the whole point of this is to put it all out on the line and hear every bit of the story. So really framed by Payne, this is, let's finally put this to bed. But we have to get it all out there. And we have to listen to all voices. And some of it's going to be a little bit crazy, and some of it's going to be down the middle. But that's the whole point, is let's put it out there. And I think everyone who listens to this has to think about what kind of judgment are they making on this case based on being presented all those facts, whether they seem credible or not?
We're talking about a new podcast called Atlanta Monster, which is about the Atlanta child murders. And you just heard the voice of Jason Hoke, executive producer, and Payne Lindsay was me as well, the host. Let's actually hear this kind of a chilling part of the podcast. This is Wayne Williams' voice, and you got to talk with him over the phone from prison.
My thing is, put the facts out and it speak for itself. We don't need to doctor it up. Just put it out there. And when we explain like things like the bridge, so-called bridge incident, what did and did not happen, like Dwayne and I have talked to, it'll make sense now. And the truth in this case is really simple. It's not complex or anything, but it's just that it's a truth that people may not want to hear.
So we're only 5 episodes in at this point?
5 in, episode 6 came out this morning.
Okay, so I haven't listened to that one yet. And there's going to be how many?
10 total.
So we don't know where you guys are going yet.
We don't know. We don't know either.
Oh, you don't know
either.
No,
I'm just kidding. We know.
It's like that. You're living on the edge.
We do know, but you can change that if you have information. This is a sort of a real time thing. So that's half serious.
Okay, so if you're out there listening and you have information that has not been heard, you know who to call: Payne Lindsay or Jason Hoke.
That's right.
But I mean, at this point, we hear a lot from people who don't believe that Wayne Williams was the murderer. But some of it is a little crazy, right? I mean,
of course.
It's a little bit nutballs. How do you go about, showing the kind of respect for people's views and sort of sifting through some of the stuff that is a little bit over the edge?
You just got to kind of tiptoe your way through it. You know, to me, it's conspiracy theories. I've never really been the type of person that's a conspiracy theorist. I'm kind of the opposite.
Yeah, one guy also doesn't believe Oswald shot Kennedy.
Right. Right. And so there's people who, you know, feel strongly about all kind of things in this case. And to me, it's more of a reflection of how people have been affected by this. Some people take this as far as it's a big government conspiracy. Some people think that Wayne killed a couple people but didn't kill everybody. Some people think Wayne killed all of them. Someone think he killed none. And the bottom line is that the reason why I'm even entertaining these thoughts at all is because every family member that I've talked to has told me that they don't think Wayne Williams did it. And that, to me, was a good enough reason. I didn't tell them to think that. I don't care what anyone thinks. I just want to know what happened. And why is that? So I think that it's because they never felt the closure. And so let's explore all the possibilities here. And who knows where we're going to end up. I mean,
well, hopefully you guys do at this point.
That's right. And we have a plan. And we have, you know, a lot of information that we've, you know, sifted through that we're excited to share to hopefully bring some of that closure for people.
So, Jason, do you get this? I mean, the sense that I got listening to the 5 episodes so far was that it's possible the justice system simply didn't handle this the way that they needed to give families closure. Did you get that feeling as well?
Yeah, I think it was two things. One, it was they were crushed by their own weight of the enormity of this and not knowing what to do in the late 70s, early 80s. And then it was also the desire to put it to bed. So how do we remove this stain, if you will, from Atlanta's history and move on from a business perspective, from a community perspective, and on and on. And so as quickly as they could find this and close it, it was really, really important for the heart and soul of the city. And that really drove this.
Right, except they may have been rushed. We only have about 30 seconds left, Payne, and I don't want to spoil the end of the podcast.
Sure.
But by episode 10, are we going to know whether you believe when Williams killed all the children or not?
To me, it's not about my personal opinion at all.
Is that a no?
So, I mean, you may be able to infer what we believe, but I think it's not about did he do it or not. And that's kind of a question I table in episode 6 that comes out today. It's not about did he do it. It's about what did he do? And what do we know? What do we not know? Let's just figure it all out. That's what we're going to do. And I think by episode 10, you'll have a solid opinion on that.
Payne Lindsay is the host of the new podcast, Atlanta Monster. You also heard Jason Hoke, executive producer for the podcast series. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just ahead, The Break Room talks about Valentine's Day and that Martin Luther King Jr. Super Bowl truck commercial. First, though, what Georgians are saying about Confederate monuments. This is On Second Thought. This is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headley. Across Georgia, you'll find Confederate monuments in town squares, in front of courthouses, and in cemeteries. Earlier this week, we spent the hour talking about the debate over these markers. You can hear that entire show at gpbnews.org. Many of you reached out to us to share your thoughts on Confederate monuments. Here's what some of you said.
My name is Regina McDuffie, and I grew up in the Macon area. I still live in Lozella, Georgia. In terms of the Confederate monuments, it's a hard issue to address in one opinion. I think it's very unclear in terms of what they represent. In my opinion, for me, they don't represent much of anything. They're just statues from the past. They are historic. But, you know, they can be oppressive to some people. And I don't want to minimize their feelings in terms of what, you know, it means. But I also think that, you know, you have to preserve history, because if you don't, then it's destined to repeat itself.
Hey, good morning. My name is Scott Gilbert. I live in Sonoy in Coweta County. I am in full support of Confederate monuments and all other American military and patriotic memorials and monuments. And I oppose any changing or recontextualizing or removal.
Good morning. My name is Beth Evans from Brunswick, Georgia. And I have a thought about the monuments and whether to leave or remove them. I heard someone raise the point about not being able to change history, and I agree, but I think we can change what we choose to honor. And I think those statues honor racial relationships we really need to change. Thanks.
Yes, this is David Cummings, Rockmart, Georgia, listening to your program, and it's about the Civil War monuments and stuff. I guess you'd say I'm a historian. I like all history, and the Civil War was part of history. I know it was a rough deal, but, you know, just because you have interest in the Civil War don't make you a racist. I thoroughly enjoy it. Thank you so much.
Hi, this is Courtney Ray. I'm calling from Athens, Georgia. I just wanted to respond about the monuments that people keep saying are for historical value, and one of your other commenters said that there's a comparison between that and the Holocaust. But what I would say to that is, in Germany, there are Holocaust museums dedicated to the victims of the Holocaust, not to the perpetrators, to the Nazis who actually committed these war crimes. But instead, here we want to memorialize those people who were the perpetrators of genocide and white supremacy, instead of memorializing the slaves and those other people who were victims of these crimes. And so instead of having Confederate memorials, we should have slavery memorials so that we can honor those who have been lost to tragedies back in the Civil War and before that during slavery.
Just some of the responses we got earlier this week from listeners to our show on Confederate monuments, and we would love to hear from more of you. How should your community handle Confederate monuments? Leave them, move them, tear them down. You can call us at 404-500-9457, and you can also reach out to us on Facebook or Twitter. It has been another long week. We have talked about Confederate monuments, hate watching, and gerrymandering. And as we do every Friday, it's time to take a breath. We have a group of smart people with us. We're going to kick back a little, unwind, and think about what the heck happened since Monday. It's time for the break room.
Maybe she did send me one. Maybe she did send me a Valentine, and it didn't get here till today. Maybe it's in our mailbox right now.
Not letting you in, pig! I'm gonna show up to work, have everybody be like, where's the blood, all of you? Because I had to slit the guy's throat who causes all the traffic!
America doesn't need a big parade to convince the world that it has a military. Trust me, the world knows America has a military. It's in their countries right now.
Joining us in the break room, we have Natalie Pavelski, Vice President of Cater Communications. Tamika DePriest is Senior Director of Marketing at Emory University. Stephen Turkheimer, lawyer, editor for Georgia Poll, and Greg Williams, host of the conservative radio show Greg's List. Welcome to Friday, everyone.
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday.
You survived another one.
So far.
Remember how the Super Bowl was just last weekend? There was Super Bowl ad that is still causing some controversy. Chrysler ran an ad for trucks that featured the voice of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
If you want to be important, wonderful. If you want to be recognized, wonderful. If you want to be great, wonderful. but recognize that he who is greatest among you shall be your servant. That's a new definition of greatness.
The new definition of greatness is a Ram truck. So do we think that this ad was in poor taste, or was it a sincere tribute?
I saw the ad, and I have to say, it just felt strange. The first thought that entered my head was, is this appropriate? But I know that the image is tightly managed and that it was approved, but my gut said this is going to create a brouhaha.
Says the marketing director, yeah.
Yeah, a major fail, especially because it's the same sermon in which Dr. King criticized exactly this type of advertising and the moral hazards of capitalism. Right.
And literally mentions trucks specifically.
I think it's, you know, very risky to try to profiteer off of, you know, an icon like MLK. We saw that with the blowback from the Dodge commercial, also with, you know, Democrat gubernatorial candidate Stacey Evans did something that caused quite the stir on that side of the aisle with, taking pictures at Ebenezer, or taking video at Ebenezer Baptist. So I just think it's a difficult area to try to tread in and take advantage of his, you know,
it's maybe
fame.
A different thing when between politics and selling products, though,
yeah,
right?
I'll go the other way, and I eagerly await Mahatma Gandhi telling me to go to McDonald's, because I feel like I just need that little push to resume
him saying I would fast except for McDonald's.
Right, it kind of
like
vegan burger now,
like,
I think.
I got this whole thing wrong, guys.
I would
have
broken my fast for some fries.
Yeah.
McDonald's vegan burger is amazing.
Yep, see?
All right, I'm not even going to comment on that. In its effort to fight propaganda, YouTube has taken some steps, and one of them is they have grouped PBS and NPR into the same category as RT. Now, RT is a news outlet that is literally sponsored by the Russian government. Do you think of PBS and NPR as state media, state propaganda?
Oh, no, this is so wrong. I mean, I'm a former journalist, and RT is state propaganda.
Yeah.
NPR and PBS adhere to the highest standards of journalism. I mean, if you want to look at where their funding comes from, 2% of NPR's budget and about 15% of PBS's come from
2%.
2%.
But, you know, all you have to do is listen for 10 minutes, and it's very clear that NPR and PBS are not propaganda. This is a very strange decision.
Right, and the goal of these networks, the goal of Russia Today, the goal of Sputnik is to rend us from the inside, right? Which is not the goal of NPR, I don't think.
Yeah, the biggest difference is where does the programming come from? So I think the programs on NPR, GPB, they operate with a sense of autonomy. Otherwise, I would never be on a show like this. So we are quite happy that y'all are able to pick your guests and not have edicts from a state organization or a bureaucracy. That's, to me, the biggest difference is y'all have freedom of expression, and you prove it every day.
I feel like if we were state propaganda, the lawmakers wouldn't hate us.
Yeah, but there'd be lots of control in terms of the content and everything else.
Yeah.
And so.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's weird because we do have a similar organ, which is Voice of America, right? Which is in that category. Though, even though I don't think Voice of America is the same.
They
also
have
Russia.
A lot of bit of mostly editorial autonomy. Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
And I agree. But it's like, even if you're going to put something there, why NPR? You should, if you're going to overcorrect, why don't you just put Voice of America in there? I just don't even understand how they ended up in that result.
Yeah, with the educational thrust, I totally agree with that thought. I mean, I often think of the school districts and the universities that these NPR affiliates are attached to.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah.
PBS, yeah, you'd have to put what's Daniel Tiger as state propaganda.
I think we're unanimous on this, right?
Yeah.
NPR is not state propaganda.
And the thing is, it's a missed opportunity because we do need greater media literacy in this country. People do need to understand that everything they hear or everything they read isn't necessarily true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, consider the source.
Helping people discern that would be helpful, but this is just weird.
Yep.
Well, then let's try and maybe go to a subject that we won't all agree on, Valentine's Day. It's coming up next week, in case you haven't purchased the chocolates or the card. Do you do Valentine's Day?
I made you all cards.
Ooh, mine says I get 1,000 kisses. Give me some sugar, mama.
1,000.
Don't short me, woman.
Louise, read your card now.
I don't really celebrate Valentine's Day. It's an invented holiday, you know?
Read it.
Fine.
Okay, so some people really hate this holiday. They say it was created by greeting card sellers and candy and flower sellers, and it doesn't have very much to do with St. Valentine, and why do we need it anyway? So who's at the table? We have Valentine's Day lovers or haters?
Oh, we have a Valentine's Day traitor. I mean, for the most of my life, I thought if you're in love, you don't need to be reminded of it. If you're not in love, you don't want to be reminded of it. And it's cruel to stick a heart-laden holiday in the middle of February. It's cold, it's dark, everybody feels fat and unlovable. Horrible. But then I got married and we had a little girl, and my husband always makes sure to get her flowers as well as me, and it just melts my heart. I can't help it, Celeste. I like Valentine's now.
Motherhood has made you a big softy.
So I'm one of those people who have really looked at Valentine's and some other holidays as, you know, sort of strategies for, you know, capitalism and, you know, make me spend all my money, just creative ways to spend my money every month. But I have to admit, it's situational with me. So when I'm in a relationship, I observe it. No chocolates and stuff like that, but I do give the person a gift and usually get one. And when I'm not, then it's just another ordinary day.
I don't know what's happened to you guys. Like, this is so transactional, right? It's like someone gets flowers and now I'm for it. I want the
flowers every day.
Well, sure, but then we can't. I don't know. Okay, I don't know how to respond to that. I will say that Valentine's Day is very difficult because you're not really sure what to do on it and all this kind of stuff. And if you want a reservation, everyone else is getting a restaurant reservation at the same time. We could be cool about this, guys, and just like, you know, take people out to dinner sometime in February, get some stuff. You don't have to get in line for all the roses and like fight with other dudes for roses. Like, we don't need to do this. We're creating this artificial scarcity of love in the middle of February. We don't need to do that. Just do it all year, right?
I'm a Valentine's Day stoic, but we are going out on Tuesday, February 13th. Yeah. So we're not going out on amateur night, which would be Wednesday the 14th. And I like to buy my wife like cool things. I bought her a flat screen TV last year. She loves it. This year, I think we're getting her a tool set. So it's a lot of really...
A tool set? Uh-huh. The mind boggles.
He's making a joke. He's being funny.
And I'm cracking up.
I do like the idea that Valentine's Day is the Black Friday of love.
Yes. You know? Can I just insert a little bit of NPRism into all of this?
Because as long as it's not dictated from the state,
if you check into the origins of Valentine's Day, which NPR very, very gleefully has done, it started with the first feast of Lupercalia, and this is when men in Rome would sacrifice both a goat and a dog, and then they whipped women with the hides of the animals they had just slain.
I'm glad we've changed. I'm glad we've changed that practice.
Well,
and then dinner.
Natalie, are we headed back to the other side?
Nothing whets an appetite like doing a sacrifice before dinner.
Especially of a dog. And then the one historian said the Roman romantics were drunk. They were naked.
That sounds kind of fun, actually.
Oh,
toga parties.
They included a matchmaking lottery in which young men drew the names of women from a jar.
Oh, that's
so like The Bachelor. Oh.
It's
cool.
All going downhill.
I'd like to point out that I was the only one here that was anti-Valentine's Day, and I've been totally vindicated.
Original intent, yes, you have been vindicated totally.
If you would like to read about the dark origins of Valentine's Day, go to npr.org and look up The Dark Origins of Valentine's Day. And you can see it all on its own. But Stefan, does your mind change when you're in a committed relationship?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
then you buy the flowers.
I don't buy roses because I'm not a cliche. I'm just kidding, y'all. It's all right. But I'm just saying I don't do it. And I go out to dinner, but not necessarily on Valentine's Day. Right. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with going out to Valentine's Day and like fighting other dudes for roses. I've done that. But you don't have to.
You're like a Valentine's Day ninja. You go out on every day, not Valentine's Day.
And I don't sacrifice goats and dogs like the rest of the people at this table.
Do you wait for February 15th and get cut-rate roses?
Cut-rate roses? Who are you talking to? No. I buy entirely different flowers.
And it's important to remember Valentine's Day occurs during Black History Month, so maybe Frederick Douglass should be, maybe it should be St. Frederick Douglass. Was he a romantic figure? Not really.
I can't see him with a little bow and arrow with the heart on it.
I mean, maybe we could have two wives.
I
don't think we should profiteer off of his
yeah.
Image.
Are you suggesting that MLK should be selling roses? I don't think that's correct.
I don't.
No, did I get that wrong?
We're going more like Frederick Douglass and Harriet Tubman selling roses, and that is way wrong.
Well, we are clearly in the Dodge category right now, going downhill.
Yeah.
That happens so often in the break room. Happy Friday, everyone. We are in the break room. Just ahead, we're going to talk about Super Bowl halftime entertainment? Is it terrible? Is it great? Atlanta traffic, we know what that one is. And President Trump's plans for a big military parade to rival Kim Jong-un's. It's coming next from On Second Thought.
I really can't wait for that topic. I'm actually overly prepared for that one.
She can say in her voice, in her way, that she like me. With her eyes, with her smile, with her belt, with her hands, with her money. I am the thesis of her prayers. Her nieces and her nephews are just pieces of the layers. Only one she love as much as me is Jesus Christ and Taylor. I got a feature song singing for my grandma. You sing it too, but your grandma ain't my grandma. Mine's handmade, pan-fried, sun-dried, Southside. And beat the devil by a landslide. Praying with a hands tied. President of my fan club, Santa. Something told me I should bring my
money.
This is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. It is Friday. That means we're having some coffee and some conversation in the break room. My guest today, Stephen Turkheimer, lawyer, editor for George Poll, Greg Williams of the radio show Greg's List, Tamika DePriest of Emory University, and Natalie Pavelski of Cater Communications. Okay, let's go back to the Super Bowl one more time. Justin Timberlake is now officially the only artist to ever play the Super Bowl halftime three times.
Minneapolis!
Yeah, I don't think he gets enough credit for being the one who brought sexy back. There is a huge backlash against the singer, though. The Washington Post wrote, quote, "The show is almost over, and then it is, and a feeling of togetherness washes over us, a feeling of certainty that we all just witnessed something unambiguously underwhelming." and that is nothing compared to what people wrote on Twitter. Was it really that bad?
It wasn't horrible, but it left me with a distinct meh. And I've seen Justin Timberlake do a good show. Like when he opened the Oscars, was that last year? It was really compelling, and he can dance, he can sing, and kind of got you up. This was just kind of eh.
So I had a totally different reaction. I was dancing the whole time. I did, though, stop at one point and say, this is like a concert. It seemed to be going on, like, extra long. And so I understand I'm an outlier. But I kind of enjoyed it. But and then I think it reflects my age, too, right? Maybe.
You're not that old.
I'm not.
Yeah, the sound quality was bad. I think we're seeing that these mega billionaire stadiums are really not good for acoustics, right? Yeah. Mercedes-Benz has had huge problems. The Garth Brooks this acoustics was supposedly way off. And this was, I mean, it sounded like we were listening to it through like a tin can or something, the sound. I was also wondering where Left Shark was. I think if we'd had Left Shark, it would have totally improved.
What you will. Katy Perry's show was
It was awesome.
Phenomenal. And then to come right after Lady Gaga.
Well, right, exactly. Yeah. But clearly, I think what needs to happen is an NSYNC reunion. Don't you think?
That's like,
he's just
what
missing his compatriots.
Those guys weren't doing anything else. I am sure they would have been available Super Bowl Sunday.
I really miss Janet Jackson, and I was hoping for like a surprise pop-up.
Yeah. Instead, the only wardrobe malfunction was JT's shirt, right?
Well, yeah, that was awful. Yeah. What was that?
I can agree with you.
When Beyonce played the halftime, she had a Destiny's Child reunion, so I think a lot of people were expecting NSYNC. Okay, so let's continue the conversation about halftime, because Bruno Mars, after the Justin Timberlake show, said on Twitter that what the NFL needs to do is invite a bunch of Atlanta hip-hop artists to perform at next year's halftime. Would you want to see Outkast, T.I., Ludacris? Would you want to see all those guys at the big game?
Yes! Oh my God. Hey, why is there such a delay here?
Outkast probably has a couple songs that don't have curse words. I mean, I just think it's going to be very difficult for some of their mega hits to be family friendly.
They have radio versions of the songs.
Right, yeah, so but can they perform the radio version live, though?
I think they can. But let me say this. That's sort of my generation hip-hop. And what I would say is they've got to add Migos and 2 Chainz.
Well, and bro country.
What about
some bro country.
Where are the women? What about Ciara?
Yes.
I mean, it can't be all guys.
Yes.
And on a related note, if any of them say ho in any of the songs, I'm turning them off.
Hold on a second. It should be Janelle Monáe, though, shouldn't it?
I take Janelle.
I take her.
Right?
I take her,
too. But let me just point out, I think we're being a little too kind to Bruno Mars, who may or may not be the second coming of Justin Timberlake.
I'd like to see him.
His halftime show.
Halftime
show was awesome.
What he actually suggested was those guys plus Jermaine Dupri. So I'm asking you, when was the last time Bruno Mars other than his own work, heard a new song.
Heard a new song from Jermaine Dupri.
Heard a new song in general, right? It's all sort of 50s doo-wop. I kind of think that maybe he hasn't heard music in a while. This is what I'm suggesting.
Okay. All right. Well,
maybe he's having a throwback experience with this
music. People could jam to Hey Ya.
A 90s reunion could be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Don't have me, I just thought of another one too.
DeBrat.
Clearly, there's a lot. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Clearly, there's a lot of passion about this. If you out there in the listening public want to suggest who from Atlanta should play in a Super Bowl halftime, we want to hear from you. You know how to reach us, 404-500-9457, or find us on Facebook.
And besides the Falcons, of course, right?
Twitter. Yeah, okay. Childish Gambino?
Yes. Absolutely.
Thank you,
absolutely.
Celeste.
Okay. During the let's move on to something completely different. Okay, switch gears here. During the trial for a convicted child molester, Larry Nassar, one dad listened to all three of his daughters describe their assaults at Nassar's hands, and he lost his temper. He lunged at Nassar and very nearly punched him in the face.
I would ask you to, as part of the sentencing, to grant me 5 minutes in a locked room with this demon. Would you do that?
That is not.
Yes or no?
No, sir.
Would you give me 1 minute?
You know that I can't do that. That's not how it is.
Well, I'm going to have to get someone.
Okay, that is the sound of the dad lunging at Larry Nassar. Social media has very strongly supported this dad. The judge refused to punish him after he apologized. Do we think the dad deserves the praise he's been getting?
I'm thinking of it more as empathy. I mean, just witnessing that, you can feel the sense of, you know, the inability, a feeling of the inability to really protect one's children, and the frustration of just this entire process. And so, you know, I think the dad deserves that empathy.
Yeah, I don't know that he deserves praise, but nor does he deserve punishment. I mean, when he made the apology to the court, he said his girls had not shared these statements with him, so he's hearing it for the first time. And I think the man just was overwhelmed, and I think any parent can understand that.
Yeah, the amount of trust that Nassar destroyed over years of his abusive practices, you know, it's just going to manifest into rage like that. And I think a lot of parents could probably identify 100% with what he did and his actions.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you nailed it. I think it's empathy versus praise. And I think we can all.
But nobody here thinks the dad should have been punished.
Absolutely not.
No.
I kind of think it's amazing only one of the parents lost it. Because how many dozens of girls told their stories? It was just awful.
Yeah, it was hard to listen to. If you're just joining us, we're hanging out in the break room. You just heard Natalie Pavelski's voice of Cater Communications. Tamika DePriest is at Emory University. Greg Williams is at the radio show Greg's List. And Stephen Turkheimer of Georgia Poll. Okay, I think we can all agree on the fact that Atlanta traffic is terrible, right? It is statistically the fourth most congested city in the United States and eighth worst for traffic in the world.
Oh, Lord.
That ranking comes from INREX, which is a transportation analytics company. It's hard to believe we're not higher in some cases. If you were the one responsible for decreasing traffic, what is the first thing you'd do?
Run trains to Cobb. Honestly, like, you could fix so much of this stuff by just getting on board. No pun intended. Actually, pun intended. Just run some trains. Also, stop running into me on my bike. These are my two requests. I think they're simple.
I would add support for and provide the, I think, couple of billion that we need for that alternate highway for trucks.
The Northern, mm-hmm. the
Northern Arc, right?
Yes, yep. Yes.
I think the single thing we most need is a comprehensive and regional approach to transit, where it's not all carved up county by county, city by jurisdiction. Yeah. And the other thing I'd love to see is, while all of that building is going on, how about a tremendous incentive for anybody who can work from home to work from home, say 1 day a week or 2 days a week?
Yeah. Well, IBM just changed their telecommuting policy and has forced everybody, well, not everybody, but many, to come back in because they found a sort of loss in the sense of team building.
I tell you, I work at home every day because headquarters is in Northern California and the commute would kill me.
Yeah. Even the flight would kill you, right?
You do need to take some extra effort, but there are ways to do it. At least for some work, not all work.
And I would benefit from being farther from the fridge on a daily basis.
And I think we've got to triple the bus service in Fulton and DeKalb counties and modernize them, because that's really going to be the easiest solution and cheaper than the $200 million a mile that some folks want to build up to Milton area of North Fulton. If you triple the bus service, modernize it, you're going to get millennials to ride it. If you put Wi-Fi on there, there's a lot of things they can do for the Fulton and DeKalb areas who actually use MARTA. If you miss a bus right now, that can delay your arrival to work by an hour because they only run every 20 or 30 minutes.
It'd be nice to have a train to Savannah, right?
That would be all good too. We can do all those things. The thing is, if we're going to do BRT, we have to do real BRT that actually has separate lanes and dedicated lanes.
BRT means?
Bus Rapid Transit. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Acronym. We like this.
I was trying to save time.
Okay, now let's move on to the topic. Talk about making traffic worse. This is going to make traffic worse, and it sounds like Greg Williams really wants to talk about this. Okay, Donald Trump has demanded that the Pentagon stage a massive military parade in D.C. with tanks and warplanes and troops.
Perhaps I'm what you'd call a patriot, but one thing's certain, whether I am or not, parade. The tramping of feet. I love every beat.
I hear from the drums. Okay. The White House says the parade would be intended to honor soldiers, but it will likely cost tens of millions of dollars, if not hundreds of millions. Is it worth it?
I don't think a grandiose United States military parade, or I do think it's a bad idea for several reasons. First, North Korea, they haven't paid their DirecTV bill in several months, so they won't even be able to watch it. We don't need the Russians or the Chinese to see our arsenal. And it's estimated to cost $22 million.
Yeah.
And that money could be far better spent on something else or a novel idea not spent at all.
Yeah, one of the Navy SEALs who was on the raid that killed Osama bin Laden put it this way in a tweet, and I quote, "A military parade is third world, I'll say BS." And I agree with him. I mean, all of those Cold War images of Soviet military parades come to mind. That's not America. We're something else.
We are headed into...
She's scratching her head, people.
Yeah. I mean, we're headed into a government shutdown for the second time. And we are willing to spend $22 million on a parade that was inspired when the president went to France and saw the Bastille Day parade. So,
I'm
disappointed.
Well, and what if they have the government shut down during the parade and then we just have missile launchers in the middle of the road all day? That'd be terrible. But no, in general, I mean, if you think about the United States, like, we have a civilian presidency. We are different from all these countries. We don't have a king. We don't have a general who leads the country, right? We have this separate thing. And now we're sliding into competing with these nations who we were founded in a model against. And that's the biggest thing that's troubling for me here. I mean, it seems as though we want to have sort of this superficial cover-up of what's really there in terms of like showing all this great, beautiful military equipment rather than sort of revealing that we are trying to just sort of justify and show this beautiful mane of hair rather than the reality of the bald spot that exists.
That was kind of gross, wasn't it?
Does it make it worse that the spending bill that just passed the Senate increases the deficit by 200.
Of course it makes it worse. Literally, the Republicans and Democrats are back to their old horse trading for their preferred spending policies, right? The Republicans get $165 billion for defense, and the Democrats get another $160 billion for their projects. And, we're still trying to figure out, are we going to have a $1 trillion deficit? And after 8 years of Obama and the first year of Trump, nobody is serious about our deficit in debt.
And we still can't protect Dreamers. I mean, like, the thing that most people agree on, that people actually care about. Yeah, we can't.
Yeah.
We still can't get it. We can't even vote on it. Like, it's one thing if we disagreed on it and it got voted down. We can't even agree to vote on it.
Mm. All right. This is my fault that we've gotten so far afield of the parade. So let me move on. when they are finished with the Game of Thrones series, right? Game of Thrones fans here. The executive producers of that show have been tapped to create the next Star Wars film. Hmm. Now, the danger here, of course, is that they're going to bring the same style to Star Wars, and then everyone's going to die horribly in the Star Wars universe. Do we think this is a good idea?
Yeah, I think it's cool. I was one of the few of some of my litany of friends that are Star Wars acolytes. I actually liked the latest movie, The Last Jedi. I thought it was great to inject some humor into it, and I thought that we do need to take the story to another place. I mean, everybody still has the halcyon, you know, memories of Luke and Leia and all that, but, you know, it's been 30 years, and those actors, you know, they really almost have to kill off the original actors to be able to go in a different direction. I think that the Game of Thrones direction, they should probably start off with one of the non-canon stories just to see what they do with it, but I'm a fan of seeing what they can do.
Wow, I think that's strong. I would just like to see less CGI, and I think that the Game of Thrones people might deliver that. So I'm down, right?
I am not a Game of Thrones watcher. Maybe one day I'll catch up binge watching.
That's a lot of catching up.
It will be.
It's 2 months.
I am a Star Wars fan, and I also believe in the evolution of creative, and so bring it.
I don't know. It's that Game of Thrones, I think, of a lot of sex and a lot of violence. And I mean, sure, Star Wars has always been a violent franchise, but it's not been gory, and it hasn't it hasn't been very sexy when you think about it. I mean, it's
but neither has Valentine's Day. It turns out.
Leia was kissing two different people. I mean,
right?
You know.
That's as sexy
Why was
as
her
it
brother?
Got, right?
Yeah,
the kiss.
So I'll reserve judgment on that.
Okay, well then let's put it out to our listeners, because I'll tell you one thing right now. There are a lot of geeks in Atlanta and in Georgia, and I bet they have opinions. So do you want to see Star Wars in the hands of the Game of Thrones producers? Let us know. You know how to reach us. It's 404-500-9457 and on the Twitter at OST Talk. We are out of time in the break room today. I want to say thank you to everybody for making it to Friday. I guess I should have done a lightning round, right? Of what story do you think should influence Star Wars? Like, if you're going to, right? I mean, clearly not Parks and Rec. That would be a completely different thing. But like
which
we've
television
got like 40
crew?
Seconds to okay. play with.
Which television
yeah.
crew
yeah, which
would you like to see
would
do
you
Star
see
Wars?
Take over Star Wars.
I don't have a television crew, but
this
I love
us.
Ava DuVernay's
yeah.
touch.
Ooh. There you go.
On a Star Wars.
I'm going to say Atlanta, FX. Don Glover's already in it, right? So he can just make
it's
this
true.
Thing happen. A little undercurrent, like, what's the Star Wars we're not hearing about?
A little couch in the middle of the universe.
Yes. What happens at the bottom half of the Death Star?
Greg?
I just said it. I can't think right now.
You can't think
Sorry.
Of that?
Nope.
Natalie?
A little bit of The Sopranos.
Ooh, okay.
Oh, I was saying This Is Us. That's right. So that we can have the real tearjerker.
Oh, well, good.
Right.
Everyone will die.
The producers in the control room have nominated Christopher Nolan. Get a little Dark Knight magic going.
Wow. All right.
In any case, you know how to reach us, listeners, if you want to give us your suggestions. As well, find us on social media or give us a call. Natalie Pavelski is Vice President of Cater Communications. Tamika DePriest, Senior Director of Marketing at Emory University. Stefan Turkheimer, Lawyer and Editor for Georgia Poll. Greg Williams, Mortgage Banker, host of the conservative radio show Greg's List. Thank you, guys.
Thanks,
Thank
Les.
You.
Thank you. Happy Friday.
Happy
for today
Friday.
And for the week that is on Second Thought from GPB News, I'm Celeste Headlee. Have a great weekend.